Why is type 2 diabetes becoming a younger person's disease? For the first time in history, more children are obese than underweight. About 188 million young people worldwide are living with overweight or obesity, and with it, doctors are seeing a once unthinkable trend: children developing type 2 diabetes. Behind those numbers are real families, kids who get winded climbing stairs, parents who quietly swap soccer for screen time, and households overwhelmed by conflicting advice about what healthy eating even means. When I went to medical school 25 years ago, I remember my professor saying that type 2 diabetes does not happen in children, Dr. Micah Olson, a pediatric endocrinologist, told the Epoch Times, but now, for the first time in history, we're seeing it in spades. The rise in childhood metabolic dysfunction isn't just another health statistic, it's a warning. To protect the next generation, we must understand what is driving it and how to intervene early. An alarming trend. Olson sees most kids diagnosed at ages 10 to 13. I've seen it as young as 6 years old, he said. Puberty brings a natural rise in insulin resistance due to growth hormone surges. However, when layered with poor diet, low activity levels, genetics, or excess weight, it may tip the balance toward metabolic dysfunction. Even more concerning is how quickly the condition advances. It's faster in kids. So if you have insulin resistance as a teenager, adolescent, kid, or preteen, it progresses to type 2 diabetes faster than in adults, Dr. Evan Nadler, obesity expert and former co-director of the Children's National Obesity Programs, told the Epoch Times. The earlier type 2 diabetes develops, the higher the lifelong risk of serious complications such as blindness, amputation, or death from kidney or heart failure, often decades sooner. Why are more kids developing type 2 diabetes? Biological, environmental, and behavioral factors are creating the perfect storm and pushing more children toward type 2 diabetes than ever before. Our modern food environment has shifted dramatically. Ultra-processed foods now account for up to 70% of daily calories for many children, with toddlers getting roughly half their calories from foods marketed as kid-friendly, such as sweetened yogurts, breakfast bars, crackers, and boxed macaroni and cheese. At the same time, kids are physically moving less and spending more time in front of screens, with teenagers averaging more than 8 hours and younger kids more than 2 hours per day, factors linked to metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance. Technology and science have made it easy to package lots of calories in a tasty, efficient, and cheap way, Olson said. For many families, that convenience is hard to resist, especially when both parents work full-time or a single parent is juggling multiple jobs, leaving little time or energy for home-cooked meals. Children from two generations ago were out on the street playing all day long. Today, kids are playing video games. How are you supposed to burn the calories that you consume? Momchilo Vyasik, biochemist and microbiologist, told the Epoch Times. Children today are also more stressed. Chronic stress from academic pressure, social media, or family dynamics, combined with disrupted circadian rhythms from excessive screen time, late nights, and limited time outdoors, can all impair metabolism during critical stages of development. Exposure to endocrine-disrupting chemicals such as phthalates, BPA, and certain pesticides further compounds the problem. Generational influences also have an effect. Nadler explained that children carry epigenetic changes shaped by their parents' health from before birth. He calls this the intergenerational transmission of obesity and believes that diet and exercise alone cannot counter these risks. It's not that you're feeding them McDonald's. It's you ate McDonald's when you were pregnant, or you ate McDonald's when you were 25 through 35, and then got pregnant at 35. While diet and exercise are still important in children, the drivers of metabolic health are often predetermined, he said. Vyasik offers a different perspective. Look at the pictures of kids from the 1960s and today. It's not genetic, he said, suggesting that changes in lifestyle and the food environment explain much of the rise in childhood metabolic disease. What can change over 50 years is epigenetics, Nadler noted. If you're a young adult and your genes get modified by your food environment, you pass on those epigenetically altered genes to your child, creating intergenerational transmission of obesity. Genetics sets the baseline, epigenetics determines how the environment switches genes on or off, and daily behavior expresses both, Dr. Joel Warsh, a board-certified pediatrician, told the Epoch Times in an email, adding that environment and behavior can often override genetic risk if addressed early. Consequences of inaction. Childhood obesity carries a stronger genetic predisposition than obesity developed later in life, Nadler said, which can increase the risk of type 2 diabetes. However, physical health is only part of the picture. Very frequently, we see mental health issues in children with obesity and metabolic dysfunction, Olson said. Studies link childhood obesity with higher rates of anxiety, depression, and attention deficit/hyperactivity disorder. The risk of certain cancers also increases later in life, as chronic inflammation and metabolic stress, hallmarks of type 2 diabetes, disrupt immune function. There is hope, however. Long-term data show that children who achieve a healthy weight by adulthood have cardiovascular and metabolic risks comparable to those who were never obese. A study in JAMA Pediatrics confirmed that effective pediatric obesity treatment provides lasting health benefits, significantly lowering the risk of serious disease and premature death in young adulthood. The message is clear: the earlier the intervention, the better the outcome. You need to treat this generation to prevent the next generation, Nadler said. That's the message for metabolic health. What parents can do. As more children develop type 2 diabetes at earlier ages, experts agree that prevention begins at home, starting with self-compassion, awareness, and small, sustainable changes. First and foremost is to be gentle with yourself, Dr. Chrissy Ott, a board-certified pediatrician and obesity medicine specialist, told the Epoch Times. Wherever we are is where we're starting from. Whether you're doing things that behaviorally accidentally augment their experience of obesity, that's something we can change as soon as we have awareness. Guilt and shame, whether inward or outward, won't motivate change, she said. Many parents simply pass down what they learned themselves. If you gave your toddler lots of juice, it's probably because someone gave you lots of juice, she said. We always do the best we can with the information we have at the time. Signs to watch for. Detecting early signs of metabolic stress in children is key, especially for those with a family history of diabetes or obesity. The first thing you'll see is an increase in adiposity, which will show up in the body mass index, Olson said. Visceral fat around the waist is another warning flag. Nadler noted that acanthosis nigricans, a dark, velvety rash on the neck, is also a key indicator. Almost every kid that I saw had it with obesity, even if it was just mild. I can't tell you how many times I'd see a kid in the clinic with it and I would tell them what it is and the kid would turn to their parent and say, "See, I told you it wasn't dirt," he added. With these physical signs, family history, and a thorough exam, an astute pediatrician can often detect insulin resistance before lab results or body mass index confirm it, Olson said. Diet. Limiting sugar in the first 1,000 days of life can reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes by 35%, according to a 2024 study published in Science. Meal patterns also matter. The idea that you have to have a snack between every meal is a fairly new phenomenon, Olson noted. Eating three meals a day without snacks is like a childhood version of intermittent fasting. It suppresses how much insulin you need to secrete. Nadler encourages small, achievable steps. If a kid drinks four sodas a day, we cut to two. Not zero. When they hit that goal, we move on to chips, or whatever dietary improvement is next. Parents should model the same changes. If you tell the kid to do it but nobody else in the family does, it's not going to happen, he said. That's what makes treating kids somewhat more difficult. It's a family affair, he said. Lifestyle and treatment. Behavioral interventions remain the foundational layer of care, Ott said. For some children, GLP-1 medications, like Ozempic, which help regulate blood sugar and appetite, may be appropriate when lifestyle changes alone aren't enough. I wouldn't hesitate to use them when we've exhausted other approaches, Olson said, adding that, in certain cases, the benefits may outweigh the risks for the child. On a macro level, I lament that we're at a place where that's basically the only solution that we have. Ott shared that her own daughter is benefiting from a GLP-1. My child has a medical metabolic condition that has a behavioral component, which exacerbates the metabolic condition. Significant behavioral interventions, including diet and exercise, can still modify physiology and potentially reverse epigenetic risk factors, she said. Action at every level. The best way to help children from developing metabolic disease is treating or preventing it in their parents, Nadler said. A recent systematic review published in The Lancet found that parent-focused interventions before a child's first birthday had little measurable effect by age 2, underscoring the need for broader, multi-level approaches. Policy measures that improve access to nutritious food and spaces for exercise can help families, but they won't solve the crisis alone. Even if we did everything perfectly, it's still going to be difficult to turn the around, Nadler said. Socioeconomic context also matters, Ott said. When I hear about families not having choices in the food they can buy, that strikes me as punishing and oversimplifying the equation. Still, progress is possible. I absolutely think that it will be wonderful for our food supply to have fewer additives and dyes in it, she added. Eat at home as much as you can, you're less likely to get ingredients you can't pronounce in your food. While there's no single fix, creating healthy food environments, promoting active play, and supporting parental health together offer the strongest defense against type 2 diabetes in the next generation. You have to start where the low-hanging fruit are, Ott said.